Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Kenneth Briggs, who writes for the National Catholic Reporter. He's a professor at Lafayette College and a former New York Times religion editor, and is the author of Power, Forgiveness, and Double Crossed, Uncovering the Catholic Church's Betrayal of American Nuns. And his latest book is the invisible bestseller, Searching for the Bible in America. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kenneth Briggs.
Thank you.
And every time we talk over the years, it's always about the same subject. And you'd think at some point or other these sex scandals in the Catholic Church would go away. But now we're learning from a grand jury report coming out of Pennsylvania of the most horrendous sexual abuse over a period of 70 years, more than 1,000 victims, and I think, 301 priests are charged, or I don't exactly know what the legal term is or what their legal jeopardy is, but this is really...
Identified,
right. This is really shocking. So you've been covering this issue for a long time. How's it strike you?
It is striking by its massiveness. It portrays the church at a more seriously defective level than any batch of particular indictments or proven charges of molestation or abuse, which have been shocking over the years, but this is like a lead weight added to the whole mess, and it reveals it as a kind of congenital illness that goes to the very heart of the way the church has operated, and so it's I think less shocking than destructive in a much more fundamental way, where the weight of this will not go away, I don't think, anytime soon, and where it can't really be identified with the few bad apples approach. This is far more systemic and serious than that.
Well, in May, 31 bishops offered their resignation to the Pope. And so far, Pope Francis, I believe, has accepted the resignations of five. But the Australian Cardinal Pell, who was very senior in the Vatican in charge of finance, he's on trial in Australia, and it doesn't look very good for him.
No, and those are relatively localized situations. This takes in a big state. And it interlocks the behavior of bishops primarily. This statement is most important for bishops because the pattern of cover up, excuse making, lying is pervasive across the board. And the grand jury made no bones about it. They said basically there was a rule of thumb among the bishops, that if cases of charges arose, then you adopted these evasive tactics to try to protect the church from harm. And they included all kinds of subterfuge. Now, that has been hinted at and pointed out in certain individual cases, certainly with Cardinal Law in Boston and McCarrick in Washington and a number of others. But this is connective tissue going on in Pennsylvania across a lot of border lines, across dioceses, and the pervasiveness and the density of it is, I think, something that is much more deeply troubling, I would think, to dedicated Catholics than any single case or group of cases that have stood out up to now.
Well, some of the examples, though, in this grand jury report from the Catholic Church's abuses in Pennsylvania catalogued some pretty nasty stuff. A priest raped a young girl in a hospital after she had her tonsils out, and another priest was allowed to stay in the ministry after impregnating a 17-year-old girl, forging a signature on a marriage certificate, and then divorcing the girl. So, you know, I take it the Pope has his hands full. I mean, how, if you and I keep having to talk about this over the years and this issue doesn't go away, how do you think it feels to be Pope Francis?
Well, I think the Pope has been a little blind to a lot of this because I think it struck him as an incredible phenomenon that he couldn't quite wrap his head around. And I don't think it's so much dishonesty or depression on his part, perhaps. It's just waking up to the truth that even bishops and cardinals and popes end up being deceived by the mystique, if you will, of the church, to the kind of image that the church has tried to put out about how its clergy behave and what they believe in. And I think the Pope pretty much has bought much of that, the way they all do in the top rungs of the hierarchy. And I think it's been very much shocking to him that he has to actually come to terms with it. And the Chilean situation, where he did first just dismiss the case against a leading bishop there, and then had to confront the truth of the matter, and he did. And he went back and he said, I'm sorry, I'm wrong, and then started accepting the resignation of bishops. I think generally stunned him and showed that in some areas he, of course, is not aware of things, or I don't think he's necessarily part of the problem, but he's become part of the problem. And now we'll see what happens. He's not a particularly activist pope who moves quickly to intervene or change direction. He deals more with words than he does with actions, but I think he is probably in a position now where he's got to have some sulking moments, wondering where the leadership of the church can come from these days if it's still imbued with that church's self-image of doing no wrong. And yet faced with this calamity. So it's really a matter of looking at the style of the church, the style of leadership. Now, he has been very forthright about saying he doesn't want bishops living like, you know, earls and dukes and princes. But on the other hand, he hasn't gotten to this part of it where he has to face that they are leading, in many cases, lives of deception and malfeasance. And so where does what kind of leadership do you want, and where do you find it, even with the best intentions? Because you're promoting people who have been raised in that system, and there has been no great outbreak of protest against what's going on by bishops and clergy themselves. So if you're the Pope, where do you find the people who would lead the church in a new direction, rather than being defensive or continuing a pattern, believing that it's in the interests of the church to keep this under wraps and to keep things flowing along? Maybe now the public is alerted. Maybe Catholics in the pews are sufficiently upset to begin to push back. But so far, it really hasn't happened to much extent at all.
And you mentioned Chile. The police just raided the Catholic Church's headquarters in a part of their investigation into sexual abuse in the Catholic Church in Chile. But just in the last couple of minutes, is there any talk of structural problems? In other words, you know, this celibacy is obviously unrealistic, and it must be a part of the mix here in terms of why there's so much sexual abuse and pedophilia practiced by priests. Why not, you know, bite the bullet, allow priests to marry and ordain women?
Well, it would, of course, take a transformation of the culture of the church itself. And that's a huge undertaking, or a huge moment where it could happen, I suppose, from some. But basically, the same system is in order. And without some kind of dramatic reversal, the church still lives by a kind of self-justification of the clergy for what it does. And until you get to a point of honesty and what 12-step programs call, you know, hitting bottom and really realizing that you got to really get honest and go in. And I don't know how it can happen with a few cosmetic changes, but, you know, some things I suppose would help. And of course, changing celibacy, I think, would. But the Pope seems unable to do it. So that's where we are now, I think.
Well, Kenneth Briggs, I thank you. I hope next time we talk, it's about something else. But I thank you. I thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, and best wishes.
And again, I've been speaking with Kenneth Briggs, who writes for the National Catholic Reporter. He's a professor at Lafayette College and a former New York Times religion editor, and is the author of Power of Forgiveness and Double Crossed, Uncovering the Catholic Church's Betrayal of American Nuns. And his latest book is the invisible bestseller, Searching for the Bible in America. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.